Professor Paul Craig Roberts is here to talk about the debt ceiling debacle and what we can reasonably expect in its aftermath, since no one wants to be talking about that. He is one of today's more progressive analytical thinkers, philosophers, commentators, and economists on the state of the nation and governmental dysfunction and political corruption and global and domestic economic threats and decay and our wars on terror and our Middle Eastern conflicts and 9/11 and the decline of human values in American society. He was Assistant Secretary of the Treasury during Ronald Reagan's first term and is a former editor and columnist for The Wall Street Journal. He is the author of some very important work, including his latest book, How the Economy Was Lost, The War of the Worlds. Nice to have you back with us today.
Yes, thank you.
Could you please give us your insights into what you see this whole scenario being, and where do you see it going from where we're at now, over, let's say, the next 1 or 2 years?
Well, the whole thing is contrived. It's political theater. There was no reason for it, no real reason. A debt ceiling increase is a standard routine thing. They've happened dozens of times during my professional life. And the reason they happen here and not in other countries is that the idiots in the Congress, primarily the Republicans, have put a debt ceiling limit in. And then they go spend all the money, and they violate the limit, and then they have to raise it. And this time, the Republicans made a big issue out of it, because I think what they have in their sights is Social Security and Medicare, or social spending. The Republicans believe that social spending corrupts the country morally as well as economically and has to be terminated. They don't mind war spending. We currently have wars in one form or the other in 6 countries. The cost of the military security complex is 75% of the United States budget's deficit. And yet they never say anything about controlling the wars or cutting them or stopping them or what the purpose of them really are. So it's an ideological program. And yet it serves as a diversion from the country's real serious economic problem, which is, for the last 20 years, the United States government has sat there while Wall Street and the corporations offshored the American economy. All the jobs people used to have in manufacturing, in software engineering, in research, design, all kinds of professional services are now located in China, India, Indonesia, and a number of other places. And when these jobs are moved offshore, what goes with it is American gross domestic product, American job opportunities, career opportunities, American consumer income, tax base. You cannot have a successful economy when you offshore it. But in the short run, it means increased profits for Wall Street, for shareholders, for corporate management, because what they're doing is arbitraging labor. They're substituting cheap labor abroad for American labor to make the products that they sell to Americans. But the Americans then are cut out of the productive process. They don't get the incomes from the production of the goods and services that they buy. And so you deplete the country of consumer income while you build up the performance bonuses of managers, the returns to shareholders, and Wall Street. And this is mindless. No other country in history has ever so intentionally or stupidly destroyed itself. And that's what the Americans are doing. And so when they get a deficit, instead of having enough intelligence and education to look and see, why do we have this deficit? Oh, we don't have a tax. Why don't we have a tax base? We send it to China. into Indonesia and India. And that's why we don't have a tax. Instead, they say, oh, it's all the fault of the people who are unemployed. And it's all the fault of those people who paid 15.3% of their payroll, all their working lives for Social Security and Medicare. It's all their fault. They're draining our country. We have to cut them off. And that's what we're faced with. It's the epitome of total idiocy. It's just total, unmitigated stupidity. And that's what rules the so-called superpower. And that's the problem. Idiots to the last man.
Okay, and woman. We have a lot of those, too, in Congress. I'm going to ask you, if you would please, to direct your answers at certain pieces of this puzzle, because I see multiple pieces, and we'll take one piece at a time, all right?
All right.
One, we had 22 Arab League nations. We had given hundreds of billions of dollars collectively over the last 30 years to different regimes. We knew that they were engaged in non-democratic principles to their own citizens. They broke labor unions. Any whistleblowers, they were dealt with severely. They didn't allow environmental laws. In other words, they really gave the money to the military-industrial complex in those countries or to the ruling families. But it was completely anti-democracy, anti-freedom. Then we come along and suddenly we say we're in Libya because of one thing, because freedom, democracy, and getting rid of this loon in the form of Colonel Gaddafi. And then I took a simple look at Libya. I have no love for Colonel Gaddafi, but I just looked at Libya. Then I looked at Saudi Arabia, and I looked at Bahrain. And what I did was I said, how much freedom do women have? Are they allowed to work? And if so, are they limited to any profession? Are they allowed to have title in their lives to their property? Are they discriminated against? And lo and behold, the best public health care system was Libya. The most freedom for women in education or careers was Libya. And on so many different social levels, the people in Libya had it much better than any other country. And then I'm thinking, well, why didn't we go in and attack Syria that actually had more people killed? Why didn't we attack in some of the other countries that are really brutal against their own people? And why is it of the 22 countries, and I'm only talking about the Arab League now, I'm not talking about other countries, either Persian or Arab, that also repress freedoms, why is it just Libya? And could you address that, please?
Yeah, it's very simple. It's because the United States is scared to death of China. The International Monetary Fund issued a report last year saying that within 5 years, China would surpass the United States as the world's most powerful economy. And Washington is absolutely terrified because it's committed to world hegemony, and it doesn't know how it can possibly have world hegemony if it's the second power to China. And so what is going on in Libya is that China has massive oil investments in eastern Libya, which is where the CIA-sponsored rebellion broke out. The United States is doing to China exactly what it did to Japan in the 30s. It's trying to deprive China of energy resources in order to stop its ascent as a world economic power, and that's why they're in Libya. They will certainly soon be in Syria because the Soviets have a massive naval base at Tartus in Syria, and it's under reconstruction or renovation, and the Russian president has announced that beginning in 2012, which is only a few months now, the Russian Navy will be maintaining aircraft carriers and missile cruisers at Tartus. Now, this absolutely sends Washington up the wall because they don't want a powerful Russian naval force in the Mediterranean, much less in the Middle East. And so the Syrian and the Libyan episodes are creations of the United States in order to forestall China and its massive investments in Libyan oil in eastern Libya, and Russia with its naval base at Tartus, and that's what it's all about.
I appreciate that overview. Let's now look at a few other seemingly unrelated items, but again, all part of this. 100 million people rose up and protested in the Middle East. We've had at least 3 million people collectively protest in Spain, Portugal, Greece, France, Italy, and Ireland, and the Great Britain. We've had almost no protest in the United States against any of the indiscretions and excessives, posturing of the government, its illegal activities on spying on us, the taking away of our civil liberties, anything and everything you could think of. We just don't have that. Why do you believe that we don't have the public outpouring that you see in other countries? And what will happen if we don't? Where do you see us in the United States and our civil liberties and our freedoms, let's say in 2 to 5 years from now, if we do not start to become aware of what is happening?
Well, Americans are victims of their patriotism. You know, they've been filled up with this propaganda forever. And so victims of patriotism, they always think their government tells them the truth and is serving their interest, and that we have all these enemies who want to kill us in our beds. And they fall for all that. The rest of the world is far more sophisticated because they've been there, not just a couple of centuries, but a millennium. And they know that governments lie through their teeth, that governments serve vested interests, that governments never serve the people. And so they're on to it. The Spanish and the Greeks, the Portuguese, and increasingly it'll be everybody, the English, the French, and not just the Arabs, can see that their governments are servants of the mega rich. And many of them are puppet states of Washington. And they don't serve the people's interests. They serve the interests that pay them. But the Americans haven't caught on. And I don't think they ever will. They're just too immature. It's an immature country, an immature people. They'll never catch on. And so in the United States, people can be driven in the ground. Look, we had, in the last week or two, the release of the Government Accountability Office audit of the Federal Reserve, first one we've ever had in our history. And it showed that the Federal Reserve, during the so-called American financial crisis, which I think was, 2007, 2008, through about the beginning of this year, that the Federal Reserve had lent to American and foreign banks $16.1 trillion. They had lent that much in 2 or 3 years. This is a sum that is in excess of the public debt of the United States. It's in excess of the gross domestic product of the United States. The Fed lent to one bank, Citibank, $2.2 trillion, which exceeds the gross domestic product of Great Britain. Now, does anyone in their right mind believe that Citibank had assets worth the gross domestic product of the United Kingdom? No. So what's going on? This question is never asked. You'll never hear it in the media. You'll never see any sign of it. Americans, as far as I can tell, have no comprehension of anything that actually affects them. But they're all taken up with the hysteria and the propaganda. And it's always the Democrats versus the Republicans, the abortionists versus the opposite, and so on, and the gay rights versus the opposite, and so on and so on. They have no clue. It's the Americans are the most insouciant and inattentive and unaware people the world has ever known, and yet they pretend to be a superpower. It's an extraordinary thing. It's very hard to comprehend how you can have a people who claim to be self-governing, democracy, freedom, and they are totally subservient to propaganda.
Okay. Next piece of this. We have in our society banks that have received loans from the Federal Reserve at zero interest, 0.25 interest, and then turned around and supposedly helped guarantee the Treasury's debt and got an interest in return paid to them. And in some cases, the Federal Reserve never actually transferred the money from their vaults to the actual banks. But the idea that they were given the money in an electronic transfer, then made interest of money they never had to take physical presence of, and then were paid by the American public for something they never have, to me, is just insane. I'd like your thoughts on how much money of our debt is actually interest to banks that should have gone under structured bankruptcy, that were bailed out, that are keeping people's getting exorbitant rates on people's credit cards as much as...
Well, look, Gary...
Give us that idea.
Well, what happened, I don't know the amount. As I said, we do now know from the GAO audit of the Fed, which was recently released, that the Fed lent $16.1 trillion to American and also European banks.
In secret.
In secret, mainly to American, but there were several trillion that went to the Europeans. Now, what's happening here is that when these banks get this money at the very low interest rate, which was low, like you said, they can turn around and then buy Treasury bonds at 3%. And they're paying, say, 0.25%. So they're making 2.75% on the free money. And the reason, in my opinion, and I don't know that this is fact, but the reason the Fed did this was to try to build back up the profits of the banks in order to restore them to solvency so that they wouldn't have to eventually collapse, so that the federal government wouldn't have to bail out all the depositors of all the banks in the country. And I think that's probably what was in the minds of the Fed officials who did this. I don't think too many of the Fed officials are venal. I think they're not very smart. But I think they still have some kind of a sense that they're there to prevent a financial collapse. Of course, that doesn't mean they make good decisions. And we have a lot of evidence that through its history, the Fed has made bad decisions.
Okay. Next piece of this. On the one side, on the right or conservative, on the left, on the Democrat, they stake their reputations upon smaller government. And yet they don't want to touch any of the subsidies for the major corporations, whether it's oil or coal or nuclear or the banking or Cargill and the food supply or Monsanto, the insurance companies. So I have to ask, how conservative are they when they're not willing to do the right thing, which would save the American public in the neighborhood? I've done the math on this. Based upon the government's own figures, of about $2.2 trillion a year. And on the other side, the Democrats saying they're for the public, but go right ahead and continue these subsidies for major corporations, even when they had control of Congress and did nothing to change this policy. Both of them seem to be corporatized right down to their shoelaces, and they're not honoring either the historical conservative or historical liberal base. Your thoughts?
Well, you see, the United States is an oligarchy. It's not a democracy, and the Congress and the President do not represent the people. They represent the handful of powerful vested interests that fund their campaigns. Who are the most powerful? It's Wall Street. It's the military security complex. It's AIPAC, the American-Israeli Public Affairs Committee. It's the insurance companies. It's the oil companies. It's agribusiness. These are the powerful private interests that control the country. They write the laws that Congress passes and the president signs. They determine the regulatory outlook. Wall Street staffs all the financial regulatory agencies. There's no independent regulatory authority anymore in the United States. The same is for the environmentalists, all the rest. It's the timber industries, the mining industries. So we are an oligarchy. There's no democracy. Now, there used to be countervailing powers to these oligarchic interests. When we had a manufacturing economy, we had labor unions. And this was a source of campaign finance for the Democrats, so that the Democrats could put up opposition to the business interests that funded the Republicans. But with the offshoring of jobs, the unions are destroyed, and now the Democrats are dependent on the same campaign financing sources as the Republicans. So both parties represent the same interests, and therefore the interests prevail. There's no countervailing power.
Only two more questions. When you look at Greece, virtually all the American media, including MSNBC and Keith Urban and Rachel Maddow and Lawrence O'Donnell, were concerned that the Greeks, with all the crisis they were having and rioting, that they not default. On the other hand, I'm thinking, who do they owe this money to? At 168% debt to their gross domestic product, they're never going to get out of debt. They just rolled over the debt at the European Central Bank and the International Monetary Fund. But then we find out that Goldman Sachs and Citigroup and all these other major financial institutions took very high positions, derivative positions, in Greece, some saying it would fail, others saying it would succeed on its debt. And as a result, the media has virtually been complicit in suggesting that there shouldn't be social upheaval. It's like it scares us. And I'm thinking, my goodness, why in the world shouldn't the Greek people go to the streets and close down their government and raise Cain when their pensions, their jobs, their safeguards, their social safety nets, their educational system, their healthcare system are all being eviscerated to pay the bankers and the investment people on a 100% return on their dollar? It just doesn't seem right, and yet that message is what we're not getting, that message that there should be any legitimate protest or that those protesters have any credibility. Your thoughts?
Yes, well, that's true. The American media is nothing but a collection of prostitutes, and they lie for their owners and for the government, which has to approve the broadcast licenses. In the case of the Greeks, who's being bailed out are the German, French, and Dutch banks. And these banks, what these banks did is they borrowed from the United States at the amazing low interest rates that you quoted earlier, and they speculated in the Greek public debt, which was paying, you know, 5 or 6 or 7%, and so they were paying zero or close to it, and they're collecting 5, 6, or 7%, and then the banks, being greedy, started spreading stories in the financial press that the Greeks were going to default. And, of course, that then pushed up the interest rates on the Greek debt that the banks were collecting. And they were just thinking, short run, ha-ha, we got the interest rates up now, then double digits. We're really making the money. We're paying the Americans nothing for it, and we're making 10, 12, 15%. And they didn't think what the effect would be of creating the notion the Greeks were going to default. And so when that notion came about, then the next step was, well, we've made all this money. They've already made whatever they invested, just on the interest. Well, we don't want to lose the principal. So what are we going to do? I tell you what, we'll get the IMF and European Central Bank to lend a bunch of money to Greece that they can't afford to repay in order to pay us off. And that's what the Greek bailout is about. It's about the Greek people taking on loans from the European Central Bank and the International Monetary Fund in order to make the German, French, and Dutch bankers whole. Well, in order for the IMF and the European Central Bank to make these loans, they have to violate their own charters because their charters prohibit them from making these kinds of loans. But the bankers, the private bankers, are so powerful that the IMF and the European Central Bank are willing to do this. Maybe the directors and the managers are thinking that when our term of office is up, the Dutch or French or German bankers will give us $1 million salaries somewhere in their system. So that's basically, in fact, that's entirely what's going on. That's exactly, precisely what's going on.
I agree. I would, I accept that this is a speculative answer I'm asking you to address, but do you see any country in that European fold defaulting or going broke or going off the euro or going back to their own currency?
Well, it depends on the determination of the citizens. You see, it's like Gerald Celente says, when people have nothing left to lose, they lose it. So when the Greeks see they've lost their pensions, they've lost their jobs, they've lost their social services, their water companies have been sold to the banks, the state lottery's been sold to the banks, the ports of the country have been sold to the banks, the Greek islands and the National Trust have been sold to the banks, and 50 or 60% of the people are unemployed with no income and no income support programs, they may revolt. There may be a revolution. The socialist government in Greece, or the so-called socialist government, is sold out to people. And the consequences on their living standards could be dramatic. I mean, it could be like, you know, the Roman Empire occupied by the Goths. And they may simply lose it, in which case they'll overthrow the government. The same thing could happen in Spain. And it could spread. Celente thinks that the wars are just beginning and that they're going to be civil wars. That the ones we saw in the protests, we saw in some of the Arab countries like Tunisia and Egypt, are actually following the protests that originated in Greece and Spain. And so you could actually see in the West for the first time since when? Since the end of the Napoleonic era, political instability of a very high sort. You could see it in the United States.
My final question for you. What do you see the quality of life being for about 240 million Americans who represent the working class, the lower income working class, the unemployed, and many senior citizens living just off Social Security and our youth? What do you see coming down the road for them?
A falling standard of living, falling opportunities. Look, the official, you know, the official unemployment rate in the United States is 9.2%. It's a total lie. If you measure unemployment the way it was measured when I was Secretary of Treasury, the unemployment rate in the United States today is just about 23%. Now, as the situation worsens, which it's going to over the course of this year and next, you're going to see unemployment rates rising up into the 30s. You're going to see people with university educations in engineering, for example, unemployed. And the outlook for American employment is poor as anywhere on earth.
Professor Paul Craig Roberts, thank you very much once again for being on, and hopefully We can have you back again in the near future to see which direction all this goes.
All right, Gary. Good night to you.
Thank you.